And thank you very much for joining. I'll do some introductions of other colleagues and the director shortly, but my name is Steve Noonan and I manage the finance activities of the company and I work for Frontier Power. And I'll take you through the first part of this presentation. I draw your attention to the important notice and disclaimer. For those of you who haven't read it so far, then you'll have the opportunity to do so later on, I'm sure. But you may already have read it, but I would urge you to do so. Well, thank you. So I'll move on now to the contents. I think it's self-explanatory, indicates the nature of the material we will go through today, but there will be opportunities for questions at the end of the presentation. Okay, so moving on to the agenda, we will present you with a brief reminder of the project, the key operational and financial issues that have faced the company over the past year, and we'll also address the outlook for the company. As mentioned earlier, there'll be opportunity to ask questions at the end. And for those of you using Teams, we'd be grateful if you could make use of the raise your hand symbol as indicated on the slide. And we will come to you to allow you to ask your questions. If you state your name and organisation you represent, that would be helpful. For those of you on the telephone, then we will make it clear at the Q&A session when you can ask a question, and we'll invite you to do so. And then again, if you could state your name and organisation you represent, that would be good. Right, so welcome. Formally welcome you to the fifth annual investor presentation. We have with us today two of the directors of the company, Nick Axum and Graham Farley, who represent the equity investors in the project, being various Dalmore managed funds following the exit of 3i Infrastructure PLC from the project in January. I'm also accompanied by colleagues from Frontier Power, Hamza Malik, who's a general manager, and Mike Edgar, who's technical director. Indeed, we have Laura Shaw, who isn't mentioned on the slide, from IML, who is also available should we need to be asking questions. Mike will provide the voiceover on operational matters and the outlook, and I will deal mainly with the finance matters. The directors, Hamza and Laura, will be available for questions at the end as necessary. And as noted on this slide, the presentation uses various industry acronyms and other abbreviations, which this industry appears to like. These are defined in the appendix to this slide deck, and you can consult that as necessary. So the background, as I mentioned earlier, I'll provide a brief reminder of the project before we get into the operational details, and these are laid out on the background slide, as you can see. But I would highlight the following point in particular. The project is a transmission project and is separate both operationally and commercially from the wind farm. As the slide shows, the wind farm is capable of producing clean, renewable energy to approximately 350,000 homes. However, this cannot be delivered to these homes without the transmission system that the world's transmission project owns and operates. The project transmission assets, as a reminder, comprise the offshore platform, two subsea cables, two land cables, and is connected to the wind farm at the offshore platform end and to the onshore grid owned by National Grid Electricity Transmission PLC, at the land end in Heysham. World's Transmission has an offshore transmission license issued by the authority in 2015, which has a 20-year revenue incentive term. As mentioned earlier, the equitable interest in the funds is managed by Dalmore, and Frontier Power provides management services to the project. Okay, so the next slide shows you some bit of detail about Dalmore Capital, Frontier Power and IML. I'm sure you're very familiar with Dalmore, and it's a large organisation. At the end of July, had over 5 billion of assets under management. Frontier Power, who I represent, are engaged to provide management services to the project. And our people have a wealth of experience in the utility sector generally and electricity transmission in particular. And we also provide similar services to four other ROFTOs. IML provide financial administrative services to projects and experts in provision of these and other management services to the PPP PFI sector. Right, so now into the meat of the matter, and operational performance. I'm going to hand over to Mike, who will take you through the operational performance of the project over the past 12 months. Mike.
Yes, good afternoon. So I'm just going to run through the operational performance highlights for WADS. So the first thing to really set out is the performance with health, safety and the environment. So the WADS transmission asset has an O&M contractor service from a consortium of Ørsted and Scottish Power, and they deliver the HSE management and management of the offshore transmission assets. As part of this process, they have a system that allows us to ensure that near-miss hazards, positive observations and awareness are maintained. And as part of their delivery of the service to the WADS transmission asset, personnel also need to obtain and maintain their training under the Global Wind Organization training requirements. So I'm pleased to say that there have been no RIDOR, that's reporting of injuries, diseases and dangerous occurrences since WADS transmission have taken over the asset. So we're delighted that that performance has continued. And in sort of broader terms, from an environmental point of view, WADS transmission has also discharged all its responsibilities as far as obligations to the marine management organisation through the marine licence. And indeed, I think we reported last year that we have satisfied all the post-construction requirements as part of the granting of the licence. In terms of health, safety audits, as well as asset-based audits, we have been able to conduct the onshore substation audits. And because of the COVID restrictions, the offshore-related aspects have been delayed till they're programmed now in to be done late September. It's probably worth saying that the COVID restrictions overall haven't presented any undue impact. What it has meant is that some routine work has been postponed to a more favourable time when circumstances have become more relaxed. But the assets overall have been maintained as we expect, and all statutory requirements met. As well as the outages that we've needed to undertake. So if I could just move on to the what work has actually been done on the assets. We have a programme each year of all the maintenance and inspections that need to be undertaking, and we are on track to maintain that plan as set out. We've previously reported that there was some work to repair 400 kV switchgear as a result of leaks that were detected. And we're pleased to report that that work has proved to be successful and the repairs remain sound. And I will go on to talk about the exceptional event claim that we submitted, but I am pleased to say that Ofgem have accepted that the events of these leaks were beyond reasonable control of WADS transmission, and they have accepted our claim that the availabilities associated with those outages are made good. So the other sort of more major, when I say major, perhaps outages that have been a little bit more exceptional have been to do with some reactive compensation equipment, an SVC. There's a circuit breaker associated with that needed some repair to address a small SF6 leak, as well as topping up an offshore transformer, which over the course of 5 years had lost a little bit of oil, which has now been replenished. So that outage this performance year will take us to an expected availability of 99.6%, assuming that for the rest of this performance year that outages or there are no planned or unplanned outages. And finally, we don't have any further maintenance outages that will impact on availability. However, we are mindful that we need to monitor the vegetation in one of the high voltage compounds. Vegetation could potentially breach the distance limits, which might cause a flashover. But at the moment, the vegetation performance is good as far as we're concerned. So if I could just move on to slide 2. So let me just, can you just move on, move that on for me, please, Steve?
Yep.
Thanks. Thank you. So the other thing to note is there are four warranty areas that we are continuing to close out on, all of which are manageable and allow us to maintain the availability that we expect from the overall assets. So the first of which I did talk about was the SVC circuit breaker and the remedial work to prevent the leaks is being undertaken under warranty. And in fact, the remaining pieces of work are being just closed out this week, but the outages that required an availability reduction were undertaken in April. Similarly, I've already sort of mentioned the transformer minor oil leak top up, and that was done at the same time as the circuit breaker, the SVC circuit breaker, to minimise the level of outages overall. The two remaining ones, one is a filter protection setting which needs to be adjusted. This isn't presenting any problems to date, and we intend to undertake that work during a normal outage to keep the impact on availability to an absolute minimum. And finally, the remaining warranty issue is concerned with the remedial works that were done last performance year. So if you recall, we were successful in obtaining an Ofgem's acceptance that it was an exceptional event. We are looking to extend the warranty provisions for what will now be a further 3 years. We are reaching conclusions to our negotiations with National Grid, who were the supplier of the equipment, and that is, we're looking to close that out in the coming weeks. So just moving on to the preemptive marine license. This is just really stating the current position that was established last year, which is if we do need to undertake any preemptive work or maintenance work, that we have a template license which allows us to undertake that work in swift order should we need to. So there's no real state change to that. The final thing on this slide is to talk about the seabed conditions. The last time we have had a bathymetric study to look at the conditions at the seabed was in November 2018, and as you can see from the slide there, that the findings at the time that there were no cable free spans but some possible cable exposures. The Barrow crossing, the position currently looks stable, although there is continued seabed change which may lead to some cable exposures, the overall situation looks stable. And then finally, just looking at the actual offshore platform itself, one of the four legs does show some levels of scour, but this was within tolerance of the actual design of the offshore platform. Now, in terms of future surveys, we have just completed the survey. Well, when I say just completed, we're in the process of undertaking the survey at the moment and hopefully completing over the next few days, subject to the weather. And we look forward to receiving the interpretive report in the coming months. So there's probably not any more to say on that until we actually have the opportunity to review the report. So as I mentioned earlier, the exceptional event associated with approximately two lots of 3 week outages on each of the circuits last year has been accepted by the authority, that it was beyond reasonable expectations that was transmission could have anticipated this set of circumstances, and therefore have allowed us to reinstate the availability. So you know, the headlines are that last performance year, effectively the availability moves to 100% from 95.4. And then sort of bringing all of that together, the availability since asset transfer up until the end of July has been 99.72%. And the availability for this performance year from the 31st of July 2019 through to the 31st of July 2020 was 99.5%. So finally, it remains that we have maintained good relationships with all the key parties associated managing this asset. That's NGET, National Grid Electricity System Operator, the Authority Ofgem, the security trustee, and the O&M contractor that undertake the routine maintenance and safety aspects of the asset. So if I could just move on to the next slide and pass over to Steve, please.
Okay, thanks, Mike. So these are the financial performance highlights and are consistent with the investor report that was issued at the end of June. And you will see the senior debt structure is as expected. The bonds outstanding at the end of August, at the end of June, and 212,798,000 million. 75% of the RPI swaps are in place, and the PBC letter of credit of 15% of the bond principal is still there and is undrawn. The ratios are comfortably above the lockup ratios as shown in that table there. And then just a summary of the position. For the current financial year that we are in, we are collecting revenue from National Grid Electricity System Operator of just over 23 million, and that's being invoiced in 12 equal monthly instalments. And that continues to be settled in accordance with standard industry conditions, and we've had no problems in relation to that. As Mike has indicated, we've had a successful exceptional event claim relating to the performance year ending 31st December 2019. We expect to collect an additional £1.1 million worth of performance credits during the financial year commencing 1st of April 2021. Costs are in line with budget. We continue to make payments to all key contractors in accordance with the terms and conditions with those contractors. All the key financial deliverables have been met, including the filing of regulatory accounts for the year ending 31st of March 2020. There's been no event of default. Cumulative debt service for the period from financial close through to the end of June was 81.4 million, which is in line with financial close and the current operational model. And as I mentioned, the PBC remains undrawn. And that letter of credit, which is 15% of the bond principal, stands at 31.9 million at the end of June. So I'm going to hand over now, Mike, to outline the outlook for the next 12 months.
Thank you. So just looking at the next 12 months then, obviously right at the top is maintain our focus on the health, safety and environmental impact that the wild transmission assets have. We also are looking to maintain a high availability of the asset and the operational plan and safety plans that we have are tailored around delivering that performance into the long term. We will be looking to manage the four legacy warranty issues that we've described and included in the paper to you to ensure that any potential impact, both in terms of any remedial outages as well as the longevity of and reliability of the assets overall, are maintained. We do intend to maintain good industry practice, and through our association with the Energy Electricity Network Association and relationships with the industry in general, as well as our O&M contractor, look to maintain and embrace good industry practice as things develop. Once we do receive the bathymetric survey report, obviously we'll be looking to understand what that means for us and ensure that the assets are appropriately protected and we're aware of what the seabed conditions are. And finally, we did mention this at the previous investor previous investor paper, that the decommissioning guidelines have changed, which does potentially impact on what's transmission. At this point in time, however, we, along with other OFTO organisations, are in discussions with both the government through the BEIS department, as well as the regulator, both in terms of what this means and what this, both in terms of the technical requirements as well as any funding arrangements that need to be put in place to support it. So that's those are the principal elements of the outlook over the next 12 months. So if we could now move on, Steve, to invite questions. So as Steve has said, that you should find an indicator on the bottom of your bar with a hand, and we'll pick up questions as they come through. Thank you. So we'll just wait on a few more seconds, and if there are no questions,
is there anyone on the phone who wants to ask a question? Because obviously they can't raise their hands on Teams.
No.
Hi.
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Orlando Finzi at M&G Investments on the phone. Sorry, not trying to be unfriendly, not being on the Teams, but it's much easier for me on the phone. If possible, just in terms of the warranty work you're doing, just to understand the sort of cost adverted if that is successful, just to have some feel for that. And then I understand on the decommissioning developments, but that's probably not clear. But what again? Do you have any sort of feel for the potential significance for you at this stage, or is that too early to comment on?
Okay. Well, if I can take the warranty work first of all, that of the work that is actually being, I mean the. Certainly the warranty work associated with the 400 kV work last year was quite significant. But am I right in thinking you're referring to The other three warranty pieces of work.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, it'd be nice to have a recap on the 400 kV. I don't have that fresh in my mind, but yes, it's the three that are in progress now.
I'll tackle the three. So effectively, each of these pieces of work, range from anything from 1 to 2 days to 3 or 4 days work. So it's which may involve a team of 3 or 4 engineers, and then if it's offshore, obviously there's a mobilisation. So it's without putting some numbers on it, that we're probably saving the tens of thousands of pounds in terms of issues with the actual work. But then, of course, there are the parts as well that we're not always privy to. But does that give you some sense of the scale that we're talking about?
Yeah, no, that definitely does. That sounds like a very reassuring number.
Yeah, and in terms of the 400 kV work, I mean, that was two lots of three-week outages. And again, a lot of that work is actually probably more associated with the labour than the parts themselves. Now, in that case, there was a team of 8 to 10 people that were working on that over that sort of period of time. So that hopefully that'll give you a sense of the scale. I mean, from our point of view, it was the availability associated with the 400 kV SF6 work that was the major point of, and we were successful with our EE claim. In terms of the SVC circuit breaker and the offshore transformer, that was it was around about 4 to 5 day outage with one of the circuits. So it's of that order. But as you can see from the reports, we've sort of set out the availability that WADS transmission has achieved even with those outages, because typically you'll take a 1 or 2 day outage per year anyway, to give you that sense of feel. So in terms of the decommissioning, there are a number of provisions in place that basically look to describe the level of securities that need to be put in place. So these are simply whatever those decommissioning costs are, they because BEIS wants to secure the necessary funds to decommission plant should the OFTO become insolvent. They are looking to add VAT to the amount of securities that are provided, because a government department cannot claim VAT back from the Treasury. I don't understand why that is the case, but nevertheless, as a result of that, they may require an additional 20% on top of the security provisions that are already set out. And there is also some provisions around scrappage and what assumptions could be made around that. So there's some sort of headline things that they're looking at, and then there's some discussion around whether and to what extent all assets need to be removed from the seabed.
Mm-hmm. Mike, it's Graham here. Could I just say something about this as well? Basically, as Mike has said, that they seem to be trying to change some of the requirements around scrappage and removal and so on, and VAT. But the whole of the OFTO industry, through the OFTO forum, which is like a grouping of the OFTOs, have raised issues back to Ofgem and BEIS about this. And this has been going on now for the better part, well, it's over a year, isn't it, Mike? I think.
Yes.
And it's, the ball is actually back in BEIS, BEIS's court. It's been thrown back at them, and they said that they would review where they're up to, and we await to hear from them. But that's not just this OFTO, it is all the OFTOs.
Yeah, and so the position isn't entirely clear yet, is it? No, and I think you know there's some headline things, but there don't appear to be any decisions at this point in time from both BASE and the regulator. So BASE is setting out the requirement, and the regulator is responsible for looking at the funding associated with that. Does that help answer your questions?
Yeah, I think that's very clear. I appreciate the detail. Thank you.
Any more?
Okay, it sounds like everyone's asked all the questions they're going to ask.
Could I ask one more question, given there's none of us coming through? It's Orlando, Finzi, M&G.
Okay.
Could I just, the bathymetric survey, obviously you need to see what the results are of that, and how often will such a survey be conducted? Is there a normal pattern for that, or is this an ad hoc? Can you remind us?
Yeah, so there's a kind of a once the asset is constructed and the cables are set out, there are some post-construction pieces of work, surveys that are done to make sure obviously what is laid down is has maintained its asset integrity and there are no issues from the construction process. In addition to that, the MMO do require post-construction surveys, both in terms of the impact on wildlife as well as what the current sea conditions are. Following that, there are a series of surveys that are undertaken, but the frequency over which they're done is very much dictated on what is actually found. So although we have quite a number of surveys early on to establish what the steady state situation or volatility level is, they then become more spaced out. But each of those surveys, if something untoward was found, the frequency of those surveys would reflect the findings. So, because the survey that we had in 2018 was relatively benign, we were comfortable that the survey was moved to 2020, really, and that was in line with our contractor's advice as well. So I can't remember quite the date. I think the next date for a survey after this current one that's done would be 3 years, notwithstanding any unusual findings.
Yeah, 3 years.
Well, I guess it's Hans Malik. I think you're correct. I mean, there are two things. There was a survey regime which was set out at the time of the construction, and then clearly that is informed by the degree to which you have seabed mobility and the degree to ensure sort of asset integrity.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And could I also just ask a question on the warranty extension that you're working on?
Yeah.
I guess it sort of relates also to the management of FS6 gas, and I just wanted to understand in terms of managing leakage of that greenhouse gas, well, first of all, how much is being emitted, but also whether this warranty is part of managing that. I just want to make sure I understand your thinking around the warranty in FS6 gas.
Okay, so I think if I could take some of that question. In terms of the leaks that are happening at the moment, there are no SS6 leaks occurring from the 400 kV switchgear, and there is absolute minimal a leak coming from the SVC circuit breaker that we're talking about since April when the majority of the remedial work was done. We do manage the insulation gas in accordance with the F-gas regulations, and we report the amount of gas consumed in the normal operation of the asset. So it's normally declared in terms of tons of CO2 equivalent. Now I don't have those numbers to hand, but I think they're in the statutory accounts or the regulatory accounts, but we do have obligations to report those, but I can't quite recall where at the moment. So in terms of the warranty, the principal warranties around the 400 kV equipment, and we have a 2-year warranty on the actual equipment repair that was undertaken, and we are looking to extend that for a further 2 years to take it up to a total of 4 years, which is about 3 years from now.
Yeah, I think it's important, Mike, to say that verbally, National Grid and Siemens, at the outset, it was in writing that they would give a 4-year warranty, but there's been quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with them about getting that formalised into a written agreement. And very recently, I have been confirmed, it was confirmed to me by National Grid that they have now agreed with Siemens the format of all that. And we're just awaiting a list of assets for our guys, that's Mike and Carl, etc., to work on that list to confirm that those exactly are the assets to which the warranty will apply. Now, holiday season has come into this, and the guy at National Grid, I sent him a chaser yesterday because he's just been away on annual leave, and I reminded him yesterday that I figured that he was back from holiday now, so please can we get on with this without further delay. But there's no doubt that, you know, in my mind, that the 4-year warranty will come to be formalised and apply. And obviously this is back from when the work started, what was done last May and June. So as Mike says, it's effectively about three further years from now.
Mm-hmm. And could I ask one last question? I guess this is just looking back at, hopefully looking back at the COVID-19 crisis. Has this occurrence highlighted any weaknesses in the processes? I mean, obviously the assets should be fairly resilient if they're maintained, but just as a catch-all question, have you learned anything from for the assets from the crisis in terms of managing them?
Not really, in the sense that these assets, although there's statutory inspections of activities and routine maintenance, the majority of the transmission assets are, you leave them alone, they're incredibly reliable pieces of equipment. So that has offered a number of advantages in terms of working around the COVID situation, to program work in to fit the restrictions that are around. In fact, one of the biggest challenges is when the guys go offshore on crew transfer vehicles, mm-hmm. and it's the number of individuals that can actually go on one boat because of the physical separation that they needed to deploy at the time. So in the early days, when the restrictions were quite tight, what this meant, they needed to run more boats. Each of the teams needed to effectively create their own bubbles before this notion of bubbles really started to surface. So the guys on the ground, what I think is worth pointing out is that the contingency arrangements within the energy industry are pretty high anyway. And one of the things that they've always been prepared for is a flu pandemic. So a lot of all that hard work in terms of preparations has effectively been modified and enhanced to pick up the learning and the needs from COVID. So it's, you know, I suppose I can't say any more than that, but you know, if you contrast flu pandemic versus COVID, actually the things that you would put in place are actually very similar. But we, you know, some of the less important things like audits, we've been able to be a lot more flexible with, and hence we're looking to do the offshore platform in September.
That's great. Thank you very much. And for the call. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think we really haven't. I think we are now at the end, unless there's any final question from anybody. Okay. Great. So I'm going to end the recording now, and then we'll terminate the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.